Welcome to the Legacy and Faith Show, featuring estate and tax attorney Paul Grant. The Legacy and Faith Show is about the journey of discovering how to create plans that protect wealth and family values for generations. And now the host of the Legacy and Faith Show, Paul Grant.
Along with co-host Mark Holland, it's another edition of the Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant. And Paul, you're standing to deliver this week.
I'm standing up.
It's already recorded one show, and we're getting ready. And you wanted to stand now.
I do. Yeah, I get a little bit of blood flow today.
Well, you're into the subject, and that
that is true.
The benefits of a trust versus a will, and not against wills, but you think the trust is a much better planning instrument, and you're going to continue to tell us about that this week.
Yeah, I think it's a far more flexible instrument. I like flexibility in planning. A will is going to do a couple things really well. It's going to get us the assets to the right people. That's a good thing. But what it's going to do is it's just going to give it to them, and we lose any other benefit that I'm going to talk about today when we utilize a will. And so so it does some good things. It directs the money properly. Now, most people who use will also use beneficiary designations, transfer on deaths, and even joint assets. All those things work in tandem, provided that you have all the same people lined up to getting the same portions and the same amounts. I have seen, unfortunately, where the will says one thing, but then the beneficiaries say something completely different. So they're not speaking the same language. There was a disconnect between what the estate planning document said versus what the client had done as far as beneficiaries. So regardless of what type of an instrument you use, whether it's a will, whether it's a trust, the instruments and your assets, they must be aligned to do the same thing. And so be careful when using any type of estate planning. Get all of your assets speaking the same language as your estate
plan. For instance, tell me what you mean by this.
Well, we have two daughters. So what if my beneficiary designation on my bank account or my investment account or my IRA said, leave everything to my spouse first, then if my wife has predeceased me or we die in the same accident, then get it to my two girls. Okay. But what if in my will I have a clause in there that says, I want my girls to have 45% each, and then I want my church to have 10%. Mm. Well, that's in my will, but I've used beneficiary designations on all my other assets.
Which one is more powerful, or one is to be considered first?
Yeah, then the beneficiary designation is going to win.
Oh.
Because that is a contract with a financial institution. When you sign up paperwork and you open up an account, there is a section in there that says, hey, if you fill out the beneficiary designation, then we are going to honor that, provided we've accepted it. And so now they are under a contractual obligation to give all the funds to my daughters instead of honoring that. When I did the estate plan, I actually wanted something to go to my church or to missionaries or to, I wanted a gift to go to grandkids or whatever the case may or may not be. The joint ownership and beneficiary designations, they supersede the will because it is a contract issue versus a will is only left to gobble up assets that don't have joint ownership and don't have a beneficiary, primarily homes. So if you have a home, a condo or something of that nature, most people have not used a beneficiary deed. So that would go through the probate process. That would hit the will. So now my assets are speaking a different language than my will in this scenario. So it doesn't matter what instrument you use. If you're going to change one, you have to remember to go back and change them all. Now, this in my opinion would be the benefit of a revocable living trust during your lifetime, which is when we have successfully put all of your assets, except for your IRA, so we do not put retirement accounts into the name of a trust. That would be very bad to do so during your lifetime. So other than that asset, we try to put everything into the name of the trust, checking accounts, life insurance policies, investment accounts, let's see, what else are there? Homes, condos, vehicles in some circumstances, timeshares, don't do it. But if you did, we can put them into the trust. Cryptocurrency accounts, the list goes on. So anything that has value, we try to put into the name of the trust. Then if you have a change, you change the trust and all the assets are submitted to the terms of the trust. So therefore, when you change a trust, all the assets fall in line. Mm-hmm. When you use a will, you can change your will. No assets fall in line because mm-hmm. they may have their own rules off to the side that actually trump the will language because it may never get to the will. So therefore, during your lifetime, in my opinion, a trust is actually an easier instrument to manage because you change it in the document and all of the assets then, again, submit to those instructions. Mm. All the assets are doing what they're supposed to do. Mm. So a will can do some good things. It can get the right beneficiary, the right money, and it can also name your personal representative or executor is what other people know that term by. So those are good things. But beyond getting money to the right person, that's all it does. It can't do any tax planning and it can't do any protections. It can't do any long-term tax planning for your beneficiaries. And then you are giving something to your beneficiaries and hoping everything goes well. So let's talk about some of the benefits to beneficiaries then of a trust, because there's plenty of them.
Okay.
There's a lot of them.
What's the first and most important benefit?
Well, boy, most important. I don't know about most important. The concept of a trust, let me explain it this way. The concept of a trust is that I've created an instrument that has my instructions. So therefore, when I die, and if I start a inherited trust for my girls, okay, so assume my wife has passed away. Our last discussion, you can find it over at legacyandfaith.com, talked about the benefits to a surviving spouse. So now let's focus on the next generation or whomever your beneficiaries are going to be after both spouses have passed, or if you're single after you pass away. Because I've created a trust, it's my instruction. Now, when I give an inherited trust, instead of just saying, go ahead and write them a check, I'm going to hold their inheritance in a trust. Now, specifically when you have younger kids, that could be a huge benefit because you may want to put in some guidelines of when they can use the money, how they can use the money, so that they don't get a big drop of assets at a certain age. So in other words, you can actually utilize a trust for a financial success story for your beneficiaries versus if I used a will and had minor children or young kids and they're going to get money at the age of 18 or just whenever I die in whatever age they're at. That may or may not go well for them. I've known some younger beneficiaries who are afraid to touch their inheritance. I've known other beneficiaries.
Afraid?
Afraid of it. Okay. And I've had other younger beneficiaries, well, they no longer have an inheritance, which is what you might expect. So they were very free in purchasing things. But what if we could set up, specifically for younger individuals, a roadmap to success? What does that look like financially? What would it look like for the finances to become available over a period of years so that they can use it and we stretch that money out for their benefit? So there is one thing with younger beneficiaries that many parents want to consider, which is, gosh, it would really be a bummer if I mean, houses nowadays are worth $1 million, let alone mm-hmm. any other retirement assets or anything else. If you have a really good paying job, you could be making really decent money and building up your wealth very quickly. And if the catastrophic happened and you left behind young kids, then there needs to be a plan of financial success. So I literally had dinner last night with a friend of mine, and this friend, his dad passed away when he was 7, and then the next year his mom passed away. Mm. But completely different incidences of why, but yet all of a sudden at the age of 8, he was raised by a stepfather because mom remarried rather quickly. And then to that stepfather's praises, wow, steps up and takes care of my friend. Mm. But what about the financial success for him long term if there were finances behind that family? Mm. So you have to think about minor children, younger children. If you're going to leave money to your grandchildren, it's possible. I have a lot of clients that say, I'll just leave it to my kids and they'll leave it to their children as they want. Fantastic. But others have a real heart to say, but I really want to leave something reasonable or even substantial to my grandchildren. How do I do that? Well, we do it by setting up a strategy for success because the trust lives longer than you. So therefore, my instructions will live longer than me and I can set those up. Okay, so my instructions are now over the trust. And because it's my instructions, then it literally still is viewed as my money. Mm. So it's not the grandchildren's. It's not my child's. So this is a very, very important concept with trust. It's very, very important. If my wife and I were to pass away and we left our assets to our two daughters, but we left it in an inherited trust, remember, they're my instructions. They're Marianne and I's instructions. So therefore, the law looks at it as still being my money. Okay? So I haven't written them a check just to put it into their own estate. Now, my girls get in a bad car accident. They're driving one day. They get distracted. Boom. They rear-end somebody, and it's a bad one. They hurt someone. Unfortunately, we see that all the time up and down I-5, 405, wherever you live. Mm. So now the bad day happens for my girls. The question is, how much of my money can a creditor take? Because now they have a creditor. Would you agree? Mm. They caused an accident. Yeah. They caused harm. It's going to exceed their insurance. So therefore, they're going to get sued. Mm-hmm. Now, how much can that new creditor reach in and take of their inheritance? Well, if I had used a will and it was all given to my kids and it was in their hand and it was put into their bank account or their investment fund under their social security number, it would all be at risk. But if I use an inherited trust, because technically it is still under my rules, viewed as my asset, then therefore that new creditor to my daughter cannot just simply reach in and take it. Mm. Now I've given my girls the ultimate control over their inheritance because if they want to actually pay off or come to a settlement, they have control to be able to write that check. It's not going to simply be taken. Mm. That's a lot of power and control. That's protection. What if my daughters get into a relationship that is completely unhealthy and they need to get out of it, a walking away son-in-law? I don't have any son-in-laws yet, but at some point I'll have one. And if that son-in-law was to leave or my daughters needed to get out, how much do I want that person to be taking of my hard-earned money? The answer is nothing. So therefore, because I've created my girls as the beneficiary. So now I've got creditor, I've got divorce protections. It is, in my opinion, the strongest shield in law that the law allows us to create to shield finances from outside attacks. And that is what a revocable living trust can do that a will simply cannot and does not, because a will just gives money, a trust holds it, and it protects it.
Definitely a benefit of a trust versus a will, looking at the benefits of trust this week. And if you're intrigued by Paul's services, you want to find out more, how do people get in touch with you, Paul?
Well, head over to our website, legacyandfaith.com. There's past podcasts, upcoming educational opportunities, ways to communicate with us so we can connect. All found at legacyandfaith.com.
Okay, back with more of the Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant in just a moment.
Can I avoid probate? Will I lose everything if my health becomes compromised? How do I preserve what I have for me and my family? Will the government take it all? This is Paul Grant with the Legacy and Faith Show. These are some of the most common questions we get on a daily basis, and there are solutions for all of these issues. It is time for you to protect your family and what God has placed under your stewardship, and we can help. Go to legacyandfaith.com to find out more about our services and upcoming educational opportunities. That's legacyandfaith.com.
Your photos, slides, scrapbooks, and home movies are invaluable and irreplaceable. Barry Kenny here with the Bear Services. Call us to save them as digital files to be stored electronically and shared liberally. We will even come to you so they stay in your possession. Go to thebearservices.com for more information. That's thebearservices.com.
We now return to the Legacy and Faith Show, featuring estate and tax attorney Paul Grant, and continue today's practical discussion to apply biblical principles for kingdom purposes.
Along with co-host Mark Holland, looking at the benefits of a trust this week, and boy, some definite benefits in a marital situation. And you want to continue, Paul, with more benefits of a trust for the beneficiary. Why don't you tell us more about those?
I have in my notes remarriage. That was last week's discussion about my spouse being remarried, but a different spouse not being able to reach in and grab my assets. Right? Mm. We've all heard that story of someone got remarried and then they died and everything went to the new spouse and the family didn't receive anything.
Right.
And so a trust will protect from that scenario so that the people you love and care about will get what you have worked so hard for, not an outside family member, if indeed a spouse were to ever be remarried. But we just talked about divorce and accident protections. Mm-hmm. Or what are other scenarios where my daughters could run into creditors? Well, what if they had a bout with cancer and they had to spend, $250,000 for cancer treatment to go through the whole gamut? It is not a cheap proposition. Mm. So divorce and health issues are the two major reasons people go to bankruptcy. Mm. So it's either they're walking away from a relationship and they can't sustain it as far as financially, so they walk towards bankruptcy, and or they have a major health issue and they don't have sufficient insurance, and so therefore they have to walk through bankruptcy.
So the trust can help protect from bankruptcy.
It can, actually, because again, the concept here that we're talking about is that when I've created the instructions and then I've put my money in it, there is a shield that goes around it, okay? And yes, there's fancy language that is actually in Washington statute, and every state has it, actually. And so it allows us as attorneys to say, we are making this trust for the benefit of this specific person or this specific group of people. So you can make one trust to benefit multiple people. I could set up a trust for all of the grandkids and they could all have access to it, or we could name specific individuals. And so the law actually affords us the opportunity in statute. So then we take that language based upon statute and case law, and we come up with fancy language that we put in, and this allows us to shield or put a bubble of protection around trust assets. Now, the price is high. I've got to die to do that. Or I can use
the price is high.
Yeah, that's right. I have to go see my Lord and Savior. The price would not be high to me. But or I can use an irrevocable trust. So we've been talking about estate planning using a revocable living trust, meaning you have full power and control. You can change anything you want, and you get to benefit from all your assets. That's a revocable living trust, standard estate planning practice. An irrevocable trust is used in one of two scenarios primarily, which is someone doesn't have very much money and we need to do Medicaid planning, so we need to shield assets. There's a five-year look-back period. There's many other considerations. Or someone has done very well, they're very blessed, and we want to shield those funds from future taxes. So an irrevocable trust then has a shield around it. But when I die, my revocable trust immediately turns into an irrevocable trust because I can't change it anymore. I just died in the story. Mm-hmm. So now we have an irrevocable trust. The law allows us to put language into that so that the funds are shielded from outside attacks, which would include a bankruptcy. Mm. So, yes, we have literally had our trusts go to a bankruptcy court and come back in full tact because I didn't have any debts. Remember, the story is that I've created instructions. Now I've died. My instructions continue to live past me. So therefore, because I didn't have debts, the bankruptcy court can't garnish me. It's just that my kids are the beneficiary. They're not the legal owner of an inherited trust. That's all the difference in the world right there. They don't own it. So therefore, if something goes wrong in their life, then my assets cannot be put online. As a matter of fact, we understand that concept perfectly. If my daughter today was in a car accident, they're not going to try to sue me because she's got her own vehicle. It's in her name. She's got her own insurance. Mm. They never come after me as her dad. So it's the same concept, which is my finances are held for her benefit, but they're never legally hers. That's the difference of a revocable living trust after you die when it's done. Now, unfortunately, again, I said this last time in my last show, so I'm going to say it again here. Most trusts that I have reviewed do not have these clauses properly built. Unfortunately, most trusts just say, give the beneficiary their money. And we just broke all these protections because it acted like a trumped up will. It acted like a will. All it did was at the end of the person's life, the trust maker's life, they said, give it away. Well, then why would you do it? Well, because it avoids a probate when it's properly funded. And there's other potential benefits during your lifetime of using a trust. But if you just simply say, now give it, now we've destroyed the protection. So even most trusts that I've reviewed do not hold the money accurately.
Are you saying then that beneficiaries for the extent of their life never really have control of this money? It's always in your trust for the rest of their life too?
Great question. So it depends on how I want to set up my trust. So if I had a special needs child, would I want to make sure that that child never has control of that money? Absolutely, because if they ever had any control, it would disqualify them from all social benefits and assistance that they need. Mm. So there are certain types of trusts where we have to put a lot of distance and control factors away from the beneficiary. In most trusts, though, I can set it up to where the beneficiary has a lot of control, not absolute perfect control, but a lot of control. So my daughters could do all the investing. They could do all the administration, be responsible for the tax returns and multiple other things. So it depends on how you're going to set up the trust. What are your values? And is your value that if your kids are married, that a walking away spouse couldn't take their inheritance? Is it one of your value that they could have assets that are protected? Is it your value that they would have lower income taxes because of the trust? Now, I just lost every CPA out there, but that's okay. So the benefits of a trust, in my opinion, highly outweigh any loss of minor control. So your question had a tone about it. You were using tone, man, that said, but wait a minute, the beneficiary won't get any control. No. They will get control.
They yeah, because they want to get on down the road and get their control. House or whatever it is they were
oh, don't
for.
They though? I know. It's like, give me my money. It's a good thing you died. So, I mean, how else would I ever survive financially on my own if you don't die? So, so therefore, the question is, in what type of a balancing act do you want to give control versus protections? And I would say that actually using a will, if we are going to say, okay, here's a great thing. Last minute of our discussion here today. I've had several clients say, I don't want to control from the grave. So I don't want to use a trust. So they've completely misunderstood a trust. You can have a very freeing trust and still get the advantages. So what they say is, I want to leave it by a will and I don't want to control it. Do you know that you are controlling them by using a will? Because in a will scenario, they must take it and it is irrespective of their current circumstance. What if they're going through the divorce? What if they're in a car accident? What if they have creditors? What if they have health issues that we didn't anticipate? See, you have forced them to take the money and at a time when they may not want to have it at that exact time. I get multiple calls a year saying, I'm in a bad situation. I just inherited money. How do I keep my benefits? You don't, because someone used a will and they are forcing you to take it. So therefore, I'm actually suggesting that a trust does exactly what you want, which is, I don't want to control from the grave. Great. Use a trust. Because if you use a will, you are forcing them to take it. Or if you have your trust say, give it to them, you are forcing them in and pigeonholing them into a result. That's control.
Okay. Never thought of it that way. Lots of interesting thoughts about the benefits of a trust on this show. And you're intrigued. You want to find out more about Paul's services. How do they get in touch with you, Paul?
Head over to our website, legacyandfaith.com. There's past podcasts, upcoming educational opportunities, ways to communicate with us. And it's all found at thelegacyandfaith.com.
Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant.
Thank you for joining us for the Legacy and Faith Show. You can find more information about the show and Paul Grant at legacyandfaith.com. Join us next week at the same time as we learn to build God's kingdom and continue our journey on how to protect wealth and family values for generations. All discussions on the Legacy and Faith Show are intended to be about general legal issues. If a situation applies to you, then we encourage you to seek specific legal advice. Please do not rely upon any discussions from this program in place of having a personal relationship with your attorney. Any listener question that may have been answered also does not constitute legal advice and does not establish a client-attorney relationship.